From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 87 of Little Brother for the 4th of June, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. It is always safest to assume that your employer is monitoring what you communicate on your company email, in your company chats, and so on. A company has too many liabilities not to, plus, of course, that computer that they have there for you to work on, that's not yours in most cases, it's only assigned to you. It should probably not come as any kind of surprise that work-oriented products such as Office 365 and others take steps to make it easier for such monitoring to take place. Well, it sounds like Microsoft have recently added a few things that employers can watch for. Many of them, things like workplace collusion, stock manipulation, corporate sabotage, are completely understandable. But one that concerns me is that they can watch for cues that an employee is leaving. While I can appreciate the tactical usefulness of such information to an employer, I have to ask, if a workplace is so bad that this is a concern, maybe they should instead be concerned with making it, you know, not bad? The Australian state of New South Wales, which most will know for its major city of Sydney, rolled out a program a few years ago to issue digital driver's licenses to its citizens. The license is available in the form of an app that runs on your smartphone and can present on demand a visual representation of your license. It includes, as you would expect, your photo, name, license number, and expiration date, class and birth date, some animated features that are metaphorically they're calling a hologram, and a QR code that should provide the means for external verification. The only problem is, the whole thing is only protected by a 4-digit PIN, so brute forcing the data out of the app is trivial, as is using the app to create a fake license using someone else's details. It seems like every store you go into, there's an app. Use our app, they say. It'll be fun, they say. Free stuff, they say. Of course, all of this comes with a price, as users of the Tim Hortons app have just found out. It seems as though the beloved Canadian donut shop chain has an app that, in addition to gathering data on your purchases at Timmy's, has also been collecting enough data about you to determine if you've gone into one of their competitors, naughty, naughty, to determine where you work, to determine where you live, even when the app is not running. Federal Privacy Commissioner Dania Terrien has decried the idea that the details of Canadians' daily lives have been commodified to sell products like a cup of coffee. For their part, Timmy Hoes is deleting the excess data and updating their app and terms of service to avoid a repeat embarrassment. Speaking of apps collecting data, 40 members of the U.S. Congress, led by Representatives Ron Wyden, a Democrat of Oregon, and Representative Anna Eshoo, a Democrat of California, are calling on Google to curb their location data collection. The driving force behind this is the move by some states to outlaw and criminalize abortion services, for which purpose a database tracking the movements of people would be a useful prosecution tool and an absolute treasure trove to any prosecutor that cares to send Google a warrant. Would you be surprised if I told you there's a bug in a Microsoft product? What if I told you it's a remote code execution bug? No? Yeah, no, me either. The bug, dubbed Felina, uses a carefully crafted Word document to retrieve content from a web server using the remote template feature. Once the content is being loaded, the document can cause a PowerShell script to be created and run, even when macros are disabled. There is no fix for it yet, so please just think carefully before opening any attachments. Or, even better, if you have the option, just don't use Office. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. Well, perhaps I should say who did we find out about this week. First up is the Chicago Public School System. Attackers were able to exploit the Battelle for Kids app used by the Chicago schools to analyze student and teacher performance and gained access to the personally identifiable information of students and staff who were active in the district of over 340,000 students across 638 schools over a span of five school years from fall 2015 to spring 2019. Battelle for Kids works with 267 school districts nationwide. The annoying part, though, is the damn delay in reporting this failure. This happened 4 months ago, and the potentially affected students and staff are only just finding out now. Security researcher Brian Krebs received a tip that threat actors have gained access to the DEA's Law Enforcement Inquiry and Alerts System, known as LEIA for short. The access gave the attackers the ability not just to search through 16 different law enforcement databases, but also to issue emergency data requests, EDRs, to service providers, allowing them to gain access to even more data by having the requests appear to come from law enforcement. This is, of course, exactly the reason why such organizations should require a warrant. But I digress. And that brings us to Costa Rica. It seems like Russian threat actor group Conti have successfully pwned the Costa Rican government with a ransomware attack, demanding a ransom worth approximately $15 million. The Costa Rican government refused to pay the ransom, however. It seems as though they weren't, though, really prepared for the situation either, as government services across the country are crippled. Diego Gonzalez, head of the cybersecurity chapter of Costa Rica's Chamber of Information and Communication Technologies, has said that he believes that attacks like this are only going to get worse. An unfortunate fact that we all live with right now is that so much of what we buy is disposable. The electronic gadgets that we buy are cheaply made, and when they break, we throw them in a landfill and buy a new one. It shouldn't be that way. Some of the things that we buy can be repaired, but the manufacturer keeps a tight control on the availability of parts, or even worse, booby traps the product so that any attempt to repair it breaks it further, often by having the computerized brain simply refuse to run. It shouldn't be that way. Well, I have some good news and some bad news. Let's start with the bad news, which comes to us from California. A bill was working its way through the state legislature there that would have enshrined the right of consumers in the state to repair what they own. Unfortunately, it died in committee. At the time of its death, it was the farthest along that any right to repair bill had gotten anywhere in the country, but it just didn't survive despite 75% of Californians across political spectrum wanting this. At the other end of the country, you find us, New York State. A similar bill has come out of committee and passed in both the Senate and the Assembly with overwhelming majorities. It's on its way to the desk of Governor Hochul, who is expected to sign it. I took this topic up with some of the attendees of the Albany 2600 meeting, so let's hear what some of their thoughts are.
I'm impressed that New York did something more progressive than California for once. I'm happy in general that we now have, or I guess it passed in New York, and oh, it's tremendous. I'm very excited. It's a win for the consumer and a win for the planet.
Well, first, I thought that was something that California would do first. They seem to be willing to pass restrictions at the state level that don't get passed nationally and sort of have an influence on the rest of the country. So it kind of surprises me that they would reject it, but New York would pass it.
I think it's a positive development. I'm in favor of it. One thing that I find interesting about the whole phenomenon of right to repair, I've been interested in the conservative response. Because to me, right to repair speaks to the notion of ownership. It's a very old concept. You know, you go back to common law. You buy something, you own it, it's yours. You can do whatever the hell you want with it, repair being part of that. And it's a relatively recent development that manufacturers have started to chip away at that and claim that you don't actually own the thing. You're buying a license and you're allowed to do with it what we say you're allowed to do with it. These are deviations from sort of older notions of ownership.
Right. Because you pay for something, you own it. Even if you check the box saying you only agree to possess it and they own it, come on, you fucking own it. It's in your hands.
I know nothing about that act. If I'm allowed to repair things, it's great. Do they still have to warranty it?
Yes.
You see, I actually don't think that's fair to the company.
Okay, what if you could prove it was a defect in workmanship?
I'd say that would be a separate process. And I mean, if you're able to prove that it was a defect in workmanship, then I feel like that would intrinsically mean you'd be able to prove that it's not something that you caused when you were in there. Like, I feel like, yeah, being able to prove it was a defect in workmanship, I am being able to prove I didn't just stab it with a screwdriver. So I'd say that is fair, and I feel like that would be a case that you wouldn't see so often.
So those were the comments of Snackness, Red, Sky Raider, Michael, and The Axe That Slayed Me. This week, I'd like to share with you one of the fundamental writings of hacker culture. This first appeared in the online magazine Frack in 1986. It's called The Conscience of a Hacker, although many folks call it The Hacker Manifesto, and it was written by the mentor. Another one got caught today. It's all over the papers. Teenager arrested in computer crime scandal. Hacker arrested after bank tampering. But did you, in your three-piece psychology and 1950s techno brain, ever take a look behind the eyes of the hacker? Did you ever wonder what made him tick? What forces shaped him? What may have molded him? I am a hacker. Enter my world. Mine is a world that begins with school. I'm smarter than most of the other kids. This crap they teach us bores me.
damn underachiever. They're all alike.
I'm in junior high or high school. I've listened to the teachers explain for the 15th time how to reduce a fraction. I understand it. No, Miss Smith, I didn't show my work. I did it in my head.
Damn kid. Probably copied it. They're all alike.
I made a discovery today. I found a computer. Now, wait a second. This is cool. It does what I want it to. If it makes a mistake, it's because I screwed it up. Not because it doesn't like me, or feels threatened by me, or thinks I'm a smart ass, or doesn't like teaching and shouldn't be here.
Damn kid. All he does is play games. They're all alike.
Then it happened. A door opened to a world. Rushing through the phone line like heroin through an addict's veins, an electronic pulse is sent out. A refuge from the day-to-day incompetencies is sought. A board is found. This is it. This is where I belong. I know everyone here. Even if I've never met them, never talked to them, may never hear from them again. I know you all.
Damn, kid. Tying up the phone line again. They're all alike.
You bet your ass we're all alike. We've been spoon-fed baby food at school when we've hungered for steak. The bits of meat that you did let slip through were pre-chewed and tasteless. We've been dominated by sadists or ignored by the apathetic. The few that had something to teach found us willing pupils, but those few were like drops of water in the desert. This is our world now. The world of the electron and the switch. The beauty of the bod. We make use of a service already existing without paying for what could be dirt cheap if it wasn't run by profiteering gluttons, and you call us criminals. We explore, and you call us criminals. We seek after knowledge, and you call us criminals. We exist without skin color, without nationality, without religious bias, and you call us criminals. You build atomic bombs. You wage wars. You murder. You cheat. And you lie to us and try to make us believe it's for our own good, yet we are the criminals. Yes, I'm a criminal. My crime is that of curiosity. My crime is that of judging people by what they say and think, not what they look like. My crime is that of outsmarting you. Something that you will never forgive me for. I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto. You may stop this individual, but you can't stop us all. After all, we're all alike. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and The Crowded Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Private Eyes, Azrael, Joe Cadillac, Thriller at Play, Fongaboo, and Julie Bernstein for story leads. Additional thanks to Azrael, Skywriter, Michael Bronstein, The Axe That Slayed Me, Red, and Snackness for reading lines for the conscience of a hacker. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Punt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. The Conscience of a Hacker segment featured Adult by Dreamfish, remixed by Corrosion and extended by DJ Wavefront. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Led by Representative Ron Ryden. Ron Ryden, yep. Good job, Chuck. You can't even say your own fucking name. A similar bill has come out of committee and passed in both the Senate and the Assembly and passed in... Additional thanks to Azrael, Sky Raider, Michael Bronstein, The Axe That Slayed Me, Red, and Snackness for reading lines for the conscious... Damn it, I keep wanting to call it the consciousness. I can't even say that word. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music didn't get used this episode, so I shouldn't even mention it.